Hello, beauties. It is Melinda Sones, the owner of Turning Yourself Inside Out Coaching. And I want to say welcome to the very first module of this wonderful program that you've invested in. Unpack your emotional baggage. Take weight loss off your to-do list forever. I am so excited about the fact that you decided to say yes to this wherever you encountered me, and that you are willing to make the investment in yourself to get the foundational level tools that you need in order to make that very last trip down the weight loss scales. So let me tell you a little bit about me and a little bit about this program. Hopefully by now you've seen the welcome videos and you have a little bit of a sense of my person, my space, and a little bit of piece of my story. I began this particular program, Unpack Your Emotional Baggage, back in September. So I've been working on this for a couple of months, and it is what I saw is the piece I was missing when I originally started this journey 2 years ago. I have lost significant amount of weight twice in my adult life, and deciding to diet is just kind of just jumping in there. There's really nothing other than the desire and an educated guess about what program might work for me involved in that starting. And then there was a huge amount of investment of time and energy and resources and a failure. And I knew that I was missing some pieces. And so as I set out on my journey to find those pieces for myself, I totally got inspired to share these tools with other women because I knew I wasn't the only one who was experiencing this kind of great big circle of really trying and meaning it, losing focus or losing desire, eating anything I wanted for a few months, finally rounding back around to trying again. So I built this business, Turning Yourself Inside Out Coaching, as a way to share these tools so that you also have the mechanisms, the tools, the ground level coping mechanisms, skills to release all that excess body from your weight. So there were three qualifications I needed when I started my journey. I needed whatever I chose to be permanent, sustainable, and passion had to be in there. Okay, so passion is kind of one of those things I discovered along the way. I had been living a pretty checked out life. I had been burned by corporate America. I had kind of just decided that my body was never really going to lose this weight, so I needed to figure out how to be happy in this body. And as I learned these tools, passion just bloomed. They were ideas I had never been offered before. I had never considered as a path to weight loss. And all of that passion that I had lain dormant and hidden for years came right back to the surface. And it's the reason that I'm talking to you today. The other two were permanent. Okay. So again, I had lost 100 pounds twice. Weight Watchers was my mechanism of choice. And if I went back to Weight Watchers today, I could certainly lose the weight. The problem was it was only temporary because not only did I gain back the 100 pounds I lost, I gained another 20 or 30 along the way. And then the third condition was sustainable. So I was only willing to embrace habits, food plans, exercise plans, etc., that I could sustain for the foreseeable future with no end in sight. Okay, so for instance, 2 years ago, I was a pretty big chip fan. So any plan that said I could never eat chips again, or I was not gonna eat chips for a year, I knew that if I was really drop dead honest with myself, that was not something I was willing to do yet. I did not exercise at all at that point. So any plan that made me start immediately exercising an hour a day, I knew that I was not able to sustain that. So as we go through this, I want you to consider those criteria. And for instance, sustainable might look different to you. It all depends on where you are entering the ocean, where your journey is starting this time as to what sustainable means to you. But one of the criteria before you agree to any food choices, any exercise choices, any permanent choice is that it is something you can be excited about doing from now on. So, first thing I know to be true about weight loss, it is impossible to hate yourself thin. You don't have to look any further than your own diet history to know that that is a universal truth. As we go through these weeks together and you see these new tools, a couple of things are going to happen. First of all, you're going to be really intrigued. You're going to have light bulbs going off. You're going to go, oh man, that really makes sense. The second thing that's going to happen is fear and doubt are going to jump right up in your face. And your brain, we're going to talk a lot about that in this module, your brain, who relies on practiced thought, things you already know to be true, is going to invite you to go right back to that Weight Watchers meeting or go back to that low-carb diet that works for a week and then fails. It's going to invite you to go back to what's familiar, even though you have proof that it's impossible to hate yourself thin. So, anytime you see something along these 8 weeks that looks familiar, that feels like some way that you've dieted in the past, I'm going to ask you to invite it to just move along. At the end of this journey, at the end of 8 weeks, if you decide that that was your path all along, you can go back there. But it is a distraction to the tools that you've invested in at this point. The great news is your body is totally begging for you to let go of the weight. And I know that might sound strange at this moment, but your body is a mechanical, neurological machine. And just like any machine, it requires specialized maintenance in order to perform at optimum capacity. Our job here is to figure out what that is. What is it that your body needs in order to run at optimum capacity? And that's where self-kindness comes into play. And it gives such a big piece of this weight loss history. Because it's through self-kindness that you begin to discover what your body's been asking for all along. It's through self-kindness that you're going to quiet that inner mean girl voice that speaks so loudly that you can't possibly hear your body's intuition. So, let's talk a little bit about kindness in general. For the most part, most of us are kind people. And society surely associates kindness with being a, quote, good person. So, when you think about kindness, what you know about it is that kindness lets you be sympathetic towards others. Kindness lets you assume the most generous story about another person. Kindness encourages you to seek their best interest and to show up for them even when it's personally inconvenient to you. Kindness is like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets, the easier it is for you to kind of show up that way in the world. And there are some areas of life where you don't even have to try. You're just naturally kind. So think about kids. The innocence of children draws us in and we're kind despite whatever kind of day we're having. The wisdom and the vulnerability of the elderly. Again, immediate kindness in play. The unconditional love that you get back from animals has us displaying kindness. I was just reading a Facebook post earlier today about somebody who didn't mean to have a dog, was never really a dog person, until she was kind to an animal, and now it is her constant companion. And then we're also kind to the people that we are most connected to. So our husband, our wife, our children, our grandchildren, our best friend. And those kindness connections are driven by intimacy and self-respect and self-esteem. So what if you use those same reasons, innocence, vulnerability, unconditional love, connection, intimacy, self-respect, and self-esteem as reasons to be kind to you, to be kind to your own person? Now, I want to also say that there is a downside to kindness, because the kind of kindness you know how to practice right now actually ends up getting in your way. Kindness in and of itself is useful, and it's tied to other concepts that we hold valuable, like grace and gratitude.
But a side effect of being unwilling or unable, unskilled, not knowing how to give to ourselves, is that we start overgiving to other people. Now, there's no hidden agenda here that's not ulterior motives. It's just our way of seeking love. And your giving starts to have strings. There's this unspoken expectation on the recipient that they're not aware of at the time that you give, but that they absolutely feel as the giving continues. And our most common expectation being the overgiver is that we are going to be more deeply loved. So, for example, say your husband has this extremely busy schedule and you have been with him for a while, so you understand all of the things that he needs to make his world work. And it seems like an act of love to you to overgive to him, to give before he even speaks what he needs, that you're anticipating his every need. So that in itself is not a problem. But because he's so busy and because you don't yet have the skill of being able to give to yourself, you don't speak about your needs and how he might need your needs. Because in a healthy relationship, energy moves in both directions. You both give and receive. But as an overgiver, you set the relationship up as one-way giving. And the unspoken expectation is, he will love me more because I do so much for him. The reality is that he feels that unspoken expectation. And instead of increasing the love he feels for you, he starts to emotionally remove himself. He starts to feel more mothered than pampered. And if he has the audacity to say that, then you are highly offended that he feels mothered. After all, your motive was love. How do I know all of that? Because I lived it for years. And I was so frustrated. I was putting in all of this effort and I was not being loved more. In fact, I found myself quite alone. And what I've come to discover as I was searching for my own answers to this weight loss journey was that most people would rather you ignore them than be kind to them and expect something in return. That behavior is driven by your seeking both outside approval and love. Somewhere along your history, you got a misinterpretation of where love comes from. That love comes from the outside world as opposed to coming from inside of your own body. Now, that's not a character flaw. That's just something that is. And as you have sought out weight loss solutions, most of them have supported that theory. This is a higher level skill to figure out, how do I get that love by myself so that I have more love to extend to the outside world, but so that my needs are also always met? That's one of the storylines, that love comes from the outside. And we're going to talk about, a lot about storylines in Module 3. But those kind of stories, like I keep putting myself out there and I'm not getting what I need in return, are part of the reason that this weight is on your body. Because in response to that frustration of the person pulling away instead of coming towards you, if you're like me, I ate. I also manifested it in other ways, like passive aggressiveness. Like, if my world's going to be bad, your world's going to be bad. But neediness, always needing to know where they were, or what they were doing, or how I could help them. And for sure, insecurity. Now, I knew those things about myself. I knew that I was needy. I knew that I was insecure. I had no idea where that was coming from and no idea how to be different. I call this victim martyr syndrome. And believe me, if you're offended by hearing those words connected to your person, the first time I heard them connected to my name, I had to catch my breath. I was very resistant to the idea that that might be what was happening to me. But my victim sounded like this. I do everything right and I still get screwed. My martyr voice sounded like, I give to everybody else and no one gives to me. And my brain practiced those two thoughts over and over and over and over. And every time it heard it, guess what happened? Food. Sounding familiar? I'm inviting you just to notice whether or not those kind of thoughts are part of your person. There's no judgment. There's no beating. You probably don't even realize where you came across those automatic thoughts. But if they are with you, they are your entry door into this weight loss process being completely different. Where we start, it was just by acknowledgement and acceptance that this is the way that we're operating in the world. And that acceptance and acknowledgement starts to give your body permission to release all of those extra pounds that it doesn't need. This is the path we're going to take from where we are to where we want to be. Awareness leads to curiosity. Curiosity leads to experimenting. Experimenting with other options leads to real change, and real change leads to weight loss. All right, I'm going to pause just a minute for a quick drink. Hold on. So let's get curious. Why is it so hard to give yourself? You are a kind person. You give easily to other people. So why is it so hard to give to yourself? Well, I'm going to offer to you that at the core, it's about an inability to receive. And the fact that we have been conditioned, society has taught us that giving has a higher value than receiving. That receiving is perceived as weakness. Okay, so think about women you know some women who give to themselves. You can picture them almost instantly in your mind. There are three words that I traditionally have associated with these women before learning this work. And they are words that I never wanted to have associated with my name. Those words are selfish, self-centered, and the mother load of all judgments, high maintenance. Okay, so I will be the first to admit that more than once I have leaned across to my partner as a woman walked into the restaurant we were at and said, "Ooh, high maintenance." And it was definitely not a compliment. Having those words associated with your name probably makes you want to eat. You're starting to see a pattern, uncomfortable thought, eating. So I want to offer to you again that perhaps not giving to yourself, not being selfish, not being self-centered, not being high maintenance, might be what's causing you to eat. So I'm going to take those three words. We're going to do a little dissecting. Like most words in the English language, they have more than one meaning, and context matters for sure. And you can feel when we say them that we immediately give them a negative meaning. But this is what's so interesting about the way your brain works. There is a positive meaning. And really, when the word enters our space, our awareness, it's neutral. We can give it either one. Why does your brain pick the negative bent? And what would happen if it chose the positive bent? How would that change how you eat? How would that change your weight? So let's talk about selfish. The normal context is that you're stealing something away from someone else and you're hoarding it for yourself, as if there's only so much to go around and you are somehow depriving someone else. The actual dictionary definition says lacking consideration for others. So because we don't want to be labeled as selfish, because we don't know how to receive, the result is that the world gets to experience us as a stressed out, overtired, passively aggressive, rundown version of our best self. Okay, so which one is more selfish? Not taking care of yourself and showing up as that altered version, or taking care of yourself so that the world gets to experience the best version of you? I want to invite you to consider that not taking care of yourself might be the more selfish path. Okay, what about self-centeredness? The instant mental picture that I get of this woman is someone who's sitting in the mirror all day long, checking her hair every time she passes, checking her lipstick, adjusting her jewelry. Okay? I the other word that I personally put with that picture is frivolous. But consider how you would be different, how I am different, if you were the center of your own attention. Would you feed yourself differently? Would you sleep more? Would you make more time for joy? I've decided that that's a label that I might willingly embrace. If I, as a byproduct, am able to lose weight by paying more positive attention to myself instead of less, that's intriguing. And it's also something I was never, ever offered as part of any traditional diet plan. And then finally, high maintenance. And I still grovel with this one a bit. But I have an intriguing analogy for you. Okay, so first of all, high maintenance. To me, that's the girl that keeps you waiting for 2 hours while she tries on outfit after outfit. She's a perfectionist. She's usually very picky, and she requires others to satisfy her every whim. She's pretty sure that she's better than you, and she has no regard for anyone else's time or resources. Okay, but what if we switch from talking about bodies to talking about cars? We're all pretty attached to our cars. What if you're not a Hyundai? What if you're not an economy car that can go years, 100,000 miles with no maintenance? What if you're a BMW? If you had invested $50,000 in a car, how liable are you to skip the maintenance? My supposition is that you wouldn't. You'd be at the dealership, whatever it took, doing the oil change, rotating the tires, the normal maintenance, because you want that car that you've invested in to run at the highest capacity. So high maintenance to me means that you finally have read the owner's manual to your body, and you know exactly what it takes to keep you at the highest level of energy. So if you are invited out to stay out till 2 a.m. and you know your body requires 10 hours of sleep to be prime, it's easy to say, no, thank you. I need to take care of myself. If you know that toxic friend, when you share a 15-minute phone call with her on the phone, leaves you altered for the rest of the day and sends you into the pantry eating, it's easy to say, no, thank you, I'm not available then, and skip the phone call. So acting in your best interest and high maintenance go together. And what if you were paying that kind of attention to yourself? So all of that comes back to what you are thinking. Are you choosing the thoughts, negatively bent version that comes to you automatically? Or are you able to see that there are other possibilities and entertain? What happens if I chose the positive slant instead? Now, I want to make sure that you know that I'm not talking about just simple thought switching. The things that you think right now, the reason you're negatively bent, has several components. Some of it is your personal history. Some of it is societal rules. Some of it is practice, thinking the same thing over and over. So we're not talking about just simple thought switching. We are talking about a true shift in what comes to you automatically. Okay? So you might not be willing to ever call yourself selfish or self-centered or high maintenance. But if you learn the skill of receiving, again, your body then does not need to get your attention with weight any longer. So the reason these pre-weight loss tools, just like a prerequisite class in college, you need some entry-level skills, is so exciting is because it allows you to acquire and practice these pieces so that when you're ready to lose weight, you get that permanent, sustainable results for all of the effort that you're going to put in. So, if both positive and negative meaning are possible, why again does your mind choose the negative one? Notice that anytime that negative shows up automatically, there's an invitation to judge yourself as deficient somehow, even though you can simply say, no thank you, and go to the more positive thought. The reason is there's actually a very loud voice that's been with you for a long time that has always been skewed more negative than positive. That is your inner mean girl. And if you're not aware of her already, I'd be really surprised. But I want to invite you to just kind of close your eyes at this point in the recording as you listen to this next piece and really get in touch with that voice that talks so mean to you all day, every day. You probably met her somewhere around the age of 12. Okay, give me just a second. I'm going to take another drink. So, as we're accessing her, I want you to think about the meanest thing that you have ever said to yourself. That thing that you've never told your best friend, maybe never told your spouse, never told your mother, but you know it's there and you know that you hear it often in your subconscious. I almost wince when I hear the emotional pain as that answer forms in my brain. That emotion, that immediate wincing pain. I apologize for the phone. That immediate pain is your inner mean girl. Today, she has you on a very short leash. She has talked crap for you for so long that just the sound of her voice reminds you, you are not enough. It asks you, who do you think you are? Or tells you, you're not even worth the effort. I've got other things to do that are more important. What messages does she send you about your weight? About your body? About the version you woke up in today? What if she's wrong? Even more intriguing, what if you can change the way that she talks to you? Okay, so go back and remember the path that I talked to you about a minute ago. Awareness leads to curiosity. Curiosity leads to experimenting with other options. Experimenting leads to real change. Real change leads to real permanent weight loss. So if you have a mean girl, and again, I'd be surprised if you'd said you didn't, awareness has already been accomplished. You are aware of when and how harshly she talks to you. Most of us have been trying to kill her for most of our adult lives, but she is amazingly resilient. But like any bully, that mean girl really just craves your undivided attention. So we know killing her doesn't work. So what is our solution for that voice? Why does she even exist? And why is she allowed to say things to you that you would never, ever say to another person? Well, the simple answer is that she was born out of self-protection. So think back. Again, if your eyes are not closed, you might try just closing your eyes and getting back in touch. Do you remember the first time you heard her voice? Again, probably in puberty. And she's probably the first person who whispered, "You're fat." She's definitely the one who shushed your voice when you started to have an opinion, reminding you that fitting in was more important than saying whatever you were going to say. Don't rock the boat. Her overarching message during those years were, never, ever show anyone the real you, because nobody is going to like that girl. As misguided and cruel as her attempts are and were, her truest goal is to protect you from pain by offering you the opportunity to pre-experience the pain. Okay, so this is a unique idea. So if you call yourself fat first, it's going to hurt, but it'll hurt less than when someone else does it. So in the beginning, she seems to have an inner wisdom that you don't. She appears right about the age of puberty when you're trying to figure out the world and what's safe and what's not safe. And because she seems to be wise, she sets herself up as the authority. Society helps her along because they show you these magazine pictures of impossibly thin bodies that have been airbrushed. And they portray soft-spoken, pliable women as somehow sexier than the ones that have actual opinions. And at the same time, your body is being flooded with adolescent hormones. Then you sprinkle in some peer pressure, and the labels that our parents assign us in a well-meaning way. So are you the pretty girl or the smart girl? And we start trying to figure out where we fit in, and that mean girl is our guide. She helps you navigate how you should be in the world. But the real danger of that voice is that she talks really loud and all the freaking time. And she drowns out the body intuition that came factory installed. You might be wondering why you still even believe her. After all, you're not a teenager anymore. You're intelligent enough to call her bluff. The answer there is practice thought. Any thought that's practiced over and over long enough becomes automated by your brain and just becomes truth in your world. That's how brainwashing works. That's how cults are born. That's how propaganda works. Okay, so add to that your anatomy. Anatomically, you are hardwired, your brain is hardwired to do two things. It is wired to identify patterns and to conserve energy. It is more efficient than any computer you're ever going to own. And those two design elements support this practiced thought. Okay, so cavemen and cavewomen, they needed that for survival. They needed to quickly identify patterns, and they needed for their brain to do some things automatically so that they had the energy to, for instance, run. Today, we don't need that so much, but it's still how we are wired. It came factory installed. So, your mean girl says, you're not good enough 1,000 times. And then the next time you don't get picked first for a team event, guess what thought shows up? She says, who do you think you are? And you shrink and you swallow the shame that she offers you. Practice thought. It moves at the speed of light, and it keeps you going in these weight loss circles. So just a note about traditional weight loss here. Traditional weight loss is based on action. I'm going to go on this diet, I'm going to do this exercise, and I'm going to get this result. The problem is that your thoughts that have been with you forever, like you're not good enough and you're fat and your body is broken, are just on a loop in your head at the same time that you're taking action. And action is never going to outpace the way that you think. So learning why we think what we think and how to choose those thoughts on purpose is your magic pill for your weight loss journey being different. Those practiced thoughts lead to practiced beliefs. So think about when you only had 10 pounds to lose. So today you might have 10 pounds, you might have 50 pounds, you might have 100 pounds or more to lose. But think back when you only had 10 pounds to lose. Did you think you were fat then? Probably so. When you look back at that body today, you probably think something like, man, I'd love to have that body back. So if you would love to have that body back today, why didn't you think that you were fat then? Because she practiced telling you that you were, and you gained practice believing she was right. So this is not a brand new idea. You've heard of it before. Some teachers call it internal thermostat or leveling or limiting beliefs. And it's totally the reason that you have lost and gained the same 20 pounds over and over. It's what you've been conditioned to think that you deserve. And it is the core cause of self-sabotage. Okay, so we lose 5 pounds, we reward ourselves with pizza. Gain 5 pounds, console yourself with pizza. You don't really believe at a core level that it can be any different. And you have proof from previous diet attempts that no matter how hard you work, no matter how long you stay focused, no matter how much you lose, in the end, you're always going to gain it back. By the time we get to the end of this program, December, I think it's 17th, I want to offer to you some new thoughts to consider might be true. So again, I want to be clear that I'm not talking about just simple thought switching or mantras or affirmations. I think those are powerful tools, but again, they are action-based instead of thought-based. I want to invite you to embrace the truth that you are now and always have been in control of what you believe to be true. You have a conscious choice about the thoughts that are in your head. And real weight loss happens when your mind truly shifts one small step at a time until what you automatically believe, the thing that shows up unbidden, your new practice thought, looks something like this. You are not crazy, lazy, or weak. You are not a failure. Your previous weight loss and regain do not predict your future. You are not your weight. You have absolutely not waited too long. And your body, this beautiful body that's listening to this recording, is not broken. This is a level of mature thought that most women won't even ever know is possible. You're learning the skill of proactively choosing your thoughts instead of constantly reacting to whatever shows up. So the more skilled you get, the less work there is for that mean girl to do. Okay, and so we already know that killing her is not possible. So what is she going to do as you take over more of her responsibilities? Coming full circle in this conversation, she is going to be your practice dummy for self-kindness. Okay, so self-kindness has two stages. Stage one is acknowledgement of service. So that mean girl appeared as a protection mechanism. She was never any smarter than you. She was not the right employee for the job, but she is the one who kept showing up every day. Shift your attention just a little and look at things from her point of view. She was never really equipped to protect you. She was given a job that she was not qualified to do. So, have you ever had a job that was way over your head? How did it feel to show up every day just waiting to be discovered as a fraud? Well, for her, that generated a whole set of feelings, and the only feelings, okay, so remember insecurity, neediness, not being able to receive, the only feelings she knew how to pass on to you were the ones that she was feeling herself. Insecurity, perfectionism, approval seeking, people pleasing. Ever wonder how you got that, where that all started? Probably by being the wrong employee for the job, doing the best she knew how to do. On the other hand, she never stopped showing up, so there's something to be said for that kind of loyalty, and we want to consider that when we are inviting her to retire. What's happened over the years, because she's been with you so long, is that you have now developed this very intertwined, codependent relationship that doesn't really serve either one of you. So that looks something like this. She squelched your voice to keep you safe. You ate because you had no voice. She told you that you had no self-control. You went out of your way to control everything. She screamed in terror when you displayed passion. You played quiet. You played small in order to quiet her. On the other hand, you gathered your courage and lost weight. She felt threatened and begged you to stop. You questioned her authority. She told you all of those old stories that proved she was right. You dreamed big. She reminded you that the world is an unsafe place. It is a textbook example of codependence. And the result is that excess weight on your body. Because your body has its own wisdom. But unlike the mean girl, its voice is not loud and demanding. It is very subtle and soft-spoken. Maybe you've never even really heard your body's voice. I've had clients tell me that they don't think they have an internal guidance system. But just because you haven't heard it yet, does not mean that it hasn't been trying to talk to you all along. If you are human and alive, that voice is present. And it has all of the answers that you need about how to let go of all of this extra weight. So in order to begin hearing that true voice, we first have to provide that mean girl with an acceptable exit plan. And that begins with gratitude for her years of service. gratitude for having had your back, gratitude for being willing to let you grow and move on, gratitude for shaping your life. And gratitude is an important part of ensuring that she accepts the second stage of self-kindness. I'm going to take a quick drink. Hold on. Now we're on to stage two, inviting her to retire. So now you're aware that she's there and that she's talking to you and that her voice does not serve your weight loss goals. So every time she appears, I want to teach you the skill of inviting her to retire. So that looks something like this. I love you, honey. I love you for showing up to protect me, but I am not fragile anymore. It is okay for you to stand down. Now, you should prepare for some resistance because suggesting retirement is going to catch her completely off guard. She's going to try to elongate her departure, needing to tie up loose ends. She's going to want to make you a list of all the things she doesn't want you to forget. She's going to assume that you want her to train your replacement. And with all of that noise, because the brain noise can amp up for a bit, you're going to be tempted to forget all about kindness and go back to screaming at her, locking her out, putting her in a soundproof room, poisoning her, abandoning her, just general nastiness, because that's the relationship that you and she have established over these years. That was absolutely my experience. Once I really accepted that she was not serving the goals that I had set for myself, I locked her out. I sent her on her merry way. I was practicing all of the tools that I'm offering you in this class. But I kept getting a glimpse of her in my peripheral vision. And as I was talking to my coach, I said, I don't need her anymore. I intellectually understand why she was there and that I'm not fragile anymore. But I keep just like getting this sixth sense that she is standing in the background waiting, like, I'm right here. If you need me, I'm right here. But I was absolutely not ready to let her back in. And that strong arm kind of, you know, stiff arm, I thought was my process. So my coach asked me to consider kindness. And it, to be truthful, it was probably the only thing I hadn't tried. I didn't need her anymore. I absolutely would not rehire her. But if I used my kindness, what else did she know how to do? She'd worked for me all those years. Then I remembered, oh yeah, the reason she's hanging around is because she lives in my brain. And my brain loves patterns. And my brain loves to conserve energy. And she's the one who taught me practice thought. So of course she's going to show up. She has years and years of practice. So I got excited about self-kindness. And I started to think about her like a three-year-old who asks the same question over and over. And if you've had a three-year-old, you know that the best course of action there is just to keep giving the same answer over and over until they remember that that's the answer. So every time I was aware of her, I again said, honey, remember, you're retired. You don't ever have to work again. Go relax. And that's when I created magic for myself. And I'm inviting you to be able to create magic for yourself. Because I haven't seen her in months. Now, every once in a while, she sticks her head in to check on me. But as soon as we make eye contact, you see that realization in her eyes that says, oh yeah, she's fine. She's not fragile anymore. And she goes right back into retirement. On your side, there's going to be an assimilation period, kind of like when you moved out of your parents' house for the first time. The absence of noise is awkward at first because there's no one there to boss you around anymore. There's no one to set the rules. There's no one to raise an eyebrow or question your judgment. And there is a component of separation anxiety because of the lack of noise. You're alone now. But it will pass, and with practice, you'll stop listening for her opinion to override yours. The biggest change is that absence of noise. And initially, that might cause you to overeat. Don't panic. That's human. You want to be aware of it. Put your awareness on it. Remember that path. Awareness leads to curiosity, leads to real change. There's also a grief component here. Even though the relationship was toxic, it was familiar and comfortable. But there is no shortcut through feelings. Feeling them is your answer to permanent weight loss. So you get your first opportunity to show kindness to yourself as you learn to allow awkwardness. Allowing awkwardness is actually a learned skill. We've been conditioned to either distract ourselves with food or Netflix marathons or alcohol or sex or sleep or drugs to make it go away. There's a whole module, I think it's number 4 in this series, about how to feel your feelings, so I'll leave some of that for later. But in that awkwardness is where you'll begin to hear your body whispering to you. You can finally hear its voice in this new normal. And I'll tell you, I have fallen in love with my body whispers. Some people call it a sixth sense. Some people call it your conscience. But learning to trust that voice is another foundational skill that supports permanent weight loss. So here's the thing when we compare our mind to our body. Your mind lies, bargains, loses focus, recognizes patterns that may or may not be true, and then repeats them, whether they serve your goals or not. Your body, on the other hand, is always, always, always acting in your best interest. So, for proof of that, look at a baby. They are completely in tune with their body. Their minds have not yet gathered enough information for their mind to trick them or do all the things that our adult minds do. So think about the way a baby eats or sleeps. It is virtually impossible to ignore a baby when they're hungry. Whatever you're doing, you're going to stop and feed them. Conversely, it's virtually impossible to feed a baby who's no longer hungry. No matter how many times you offer them the bottle, they are going to spit it out. Same story for sleep. A sleepy baby is going to fall out wherever you are in the most uncomfortable position. And a non-sleepy baby, it doesn't matter what you do, they're not going to go into dreamland. So, your body already has all of the information you need to reach your natural weight and live there effortlessly. It has the answers to what foods do I eat to lose weight, how much do I exercise, and what kind of exercise. All of those questions that we try to broker when picking a diet plan, your body already has those answers. A major advantage to assigning your body as the last word is that you also get to let go of old dieting habits like calorie counting, weighing and measuring food, not eating out, that quandary that happens in a restaurant about what am I going to eat without blowing all of my efforts. Once you learn to interpret the information your body provides, you'll be able to recognize what hungry feels like, what full feels like, what foods your body uses for fuel, and how much sleep leaves you feeling most energized. So, if you're sitting listening to this recording and you're thinking, now that sounds well and good, but I don't see how that's ever going to happen. If it's counter to everything you've ever been taught about losing weight, then I want to offer to you that you're in exactly the right place. That doubt is that mean girl self-protection voice saying, don't get your hopes up. Don't buy in again. I don't want you to be disappointed. It's okay, because one habit at a time, you'll get there. And then weight loss will be off of your to-do list forever. As you start to embrace self-kindness, I want you to think about 6 different distinct habits that lead to your body functioning at the highest capacity. Your body has always been sending you information about these 6 areas. It's not something new. You have now just started learning to reduce all of the other noise that was masking your ability to hear it. So, here's where you begin the habits that lead to weight loss. They're life skills that you'll practice over and over until they're the equivalent of brushing your teeth. There's no drama, there's no debate, you just do it. It is the maintenance that your BMW body requires in order to work at maximum optimal capacity. Okay? So, those 6 areas, fuel, food. What does your body use for fuel? How do you decide when and what to eat? Water, hydration is huge. Many, many, many times we confuse thirst with hunger. So how much water is enough? Sleep. How many hours do I really need in order to be rejuvenated at my best in the morning? Movement. How much does my body need to move? What way does it need to move? How vigorously does it need to move? Mind management. What do I think and why do I think it? And then the secret sauce, which is joy, that for most of us is completely intertwined with food. And there's a whole section, again, the last section, about joy and how to increase your joy factor. So get still and listen for your body whispers. Which areas do you think you need the most attention? Which areas do you think that you've already mastered? Listen to your body. Pick one and let that be the place that you put your focus for the next 7 days. Also, pay attention to the automatic thoughts that are showing up, because you're just starting to practice the skill of quieting your mean girl. She's still there talking to you. So if she's saying something like, this won't work either, or I can never make all of those things happen simultaneously, or change is scary, I'll just go back and do what I've always done. You want to pay attention, because the way you think, your automatic thoughts are what you believe to be true, and they are the criteria that you use to make decisions about everything from what to eat to where you work. What we want to do, what we need to do, is change the automatic thoughts that come to you. So if that mean girl is lurking in your peripheral vision, invite her to go back into retirement. You've got this. I've got some excellent tools that are attached to this lesson that will let this move from intellectualness down into your bones, so that at the end of this 8 weeks together, you are truly changed and you're excited about being able to see that weight loss truly can be off of your to-do list forever. Have a beautiful week. I'm looking forward to our shared phone call to answer any questions that you have here or clarify anything that you need some more direction on. Again, take a minute and be proud of the investment that you've made in yourself. I love you, beauties. Mean it. Talk to you soon.